And welcome back to another edition of the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, always alongside my terrific co-host, Jonah Tolles. And Jonah, I must say, I am tasting the sweet taste of victory right now because my Minnesota Vikings defeated your Dallas Cowboys in Dallas 28-24. And I can feel the steam coming out of your ears right now through my microphone just because there were a lot of skeptical decisions and head-scratching decisions made in this game. And I thought the Vikings really dominated the game for the most part. And just that rushing attack and the way they used Dalvin Cook in this game, I thought that it was just in a dominating fashion. And the Cowboys now sitting at 5-4. And there's a lot of questions surrounding Jason Garrett and his future now in Dallas. But I'm going to open up the floor completely to you right now just because I can feel the steam coming out your ears. I keep saying that. And I know you're going on a Twitter rant right now, so just let it all out right now.
I want to go full nuclear on this coaching staff. I mean, you talk about not just running the ball on every damn first down, but when you get into crunch time, and Dak Prescott, keep in mind, this guy's playing the best game of his career. Nearly 400 yards, been lights out with ball placement all night. This is a guy who struggled with ball placement throughout college, and he's really developed himself into a franchise quarterback. Playing the best game of his career at home, and you take the ball out of his hands in crunch time, not just one down. I think it was fine to run on that second down, but on third down, you run an outside sweep to Zeke that goes for a three-yard loss. This is inexcusable. And then, to make matters worse, now to even get the ball back, Tavon Austin has about 50 yards of running room. He is on this team solely because he has punt return value. That is the only reason why he's even active on game days. Only reason why. And the coaching staff told him to take a fair catch? You're talking about free yards. Not just free yards. You're talking about a potential, big play. This is unbelievable. The fact that this coaching staff thought a Hail Mary will be more likely than a Tavon Austin touchdown with 50 yards of running room is beyond me. And it just goes to show you that Jason Garrett has really – and I've defended Jason Garrett for years. But at the same time, this stuff, this mediocre stuff from this coaching staff happens year after year. And I was telling you off the air that Jason Garrett is one of the sole reasons why the Cowboys drafted Taco Charlton over T.J. Watt. So it's not just game day decisions. It's also front office decisions and making – decision during the draft and free agency and whatnot. It's just an accumulation of all these things. And I think it's time for Dallas. If Dallas does not make the playoffs this year, I can guarantee you a change is coming. Jason Garrett won't survive if they don't make the playoffs, and rightfully so. And this Vikings game is just, this has to be one of the most brutal losses I've suffered in a long time as a Cowboys fan, just because this game was absolutely winnable and we wasted Dak Prescott's best game of his career.
Yeah, and then you see, some of the reports coming out about over the bye week where they were supposed to talk about extension talks with him. And, of course, we hear the $40 million a year number come out a couple months ago, which I thought was very untrue. I just thought that probably was the team trying to leak some things to make Dak look bad for whatever reason. But, man, he's playing like a franchise quarterback this year, and I wouldn't have any problems paying him. But I think this thing is destined for the franchise tag, and unfortunately, Dak's future is still going to be surrounded with question marks while on that franchise tag, just because I think it's the whole Kirk Cousins ordeal again with the Washington Redskins. Now, the relationship between the two parties are much better than what Kirk's and the Redskins were at the time, but I just think this thing is headed towards the franchise tag, and Jerry Jones isn't scared or shy about opening his wallet for some of the players that he does covet. He's done it with Zeke. He did it with Lyle Collins and some other guys, Jalen Smith, another guy as well, so It wouldn't be surprising to see them finally reach an extension, but I just don't see that right now. Do you have the same feeling about this whole Dak Prescott and extension thing and where it's headed towards?
Let me preface this by this. Dak Prescott's going to be a Dallas Cowboy, and I don't think it's going to be the Kirk Cousins deal you and I both know Kirk Cousins was on the outs. His relationship with Washington was 10 times worse than what Dallas is. Dak Prescott and Dallas Cowboys, I think that's a marriage that will continue for the long term and foreseeable future. I think they'll get something done. Even if he gets franchise tag, I think they'll just continue to work on that. But the problem with using the franchise tag on Dak is not necessarily Dak's future. I think Dak's going to stay a Cowboy for maybe the rest of his career, or at least the bulk of his career. The problem with using the franchise tag on Dak is, what do you do with Byron Jones now? Because the whole plan was to use the franchise tag, I think, on Byron Jones. And I think that was the plan, at least the whispers I've got from this front office. So are you going to transition tag him? I'm trying to figure out what you're going to do with him, because with the way these cornerbacks are playing for the Cowboys, it's going to be interesting to see what they do if they let Byron Jones walk, because this Cowboys cornerback group is not playing well. Chidobe Awuzie had a couple big – it really hasn't played well all season. He saw a lot of that against the Vikings tonight. Anthony Brown's been hurt. Jordan Lewis has been the coach's doghouse for a while now. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do with Byron Jones. And I think this Dak Prescott franchise tag news is not so much big news on Dak as it is a ripple effect on the rest of the roster.
Yeah, and it's going to definitely be an interesting situation. But, of course, this is a college football podcast, so we kind of have to get back on topic. But we said we were going to talk about that when we preview that on our Friday show. But for our Monday show, of course, we wanted to dive into that really quickly. Of course, it is Prize Sticker Monday, so we're going to pass out some prize stickers here in a second. And then, of course, the second segment, of course, we have to get into the Alabama and LSU matchup. That's something that everybody was watching the entire weekend. All eyes were on that over the weekend, and it definitely did live up to the hype. It was a bit more high-scoring than what I thought it was going to be, but it's always entertaining when we see those high-scoring games. I always enjoy those much more than a defensive showdown, which some people thought it was going to be, but not me, even though the final score ended up being 46-41. But before we move on, here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, so we are back and we are ready to pass out prize stickers. And there were a lot of great performances throughout the week. Of course, I have to turn it over to you, because we always seem to have the same players for whatever reason, just because we have a similar eye and talent. And of course, I respect your eye and your scouting game and exactly what you see. So who were some guys that stood out to you the most this week?
Well, interestingly enough, my two prize stickers this week go to the players from the same conference, the ACC. And I know Travis Etienne has been, you know, he's been criticized a little bit this season for getting off to a slow start. I think he got a lot of hype last year coming into this season because of the big playability and whatnot. But he kind of, you know, he's been so-so for the most part. But for this recent stretch of five games, he's been absolutely dominant. 100 yards in five straight games. And it was no different here. 114 carries for 112 yards and two touchdowns. Then three catches for 31 yards and a touchdown against NC State. Now, really, I mean, he's now up to, check this out. He's now up to 1,214 yards on just 137 carries. That's an insane number in that average. And really, that just shows you how much of a home run threat he is and how he's a threat to be a house call anytime he gets the ball. And I think he's firmly putting his name in the first-round conversation of the 2020 NFL draft. And I know running backs aren't as valued as much in terms of the early rounds, but when you have a specific trait that translates, like Etienne's speed and his explosiveness, I think there are a lot of teams that'll have him as a top running back in the 2020 NFL draft. Now, for my defensive pride sticker, I'm going to go to Hamza Nasruldeen from Florida State. And you know very well that this is one of my guys. I've been on him since the summer.
Absolutely.
This guy's a safety linebacker hybrid.
Yep.
And check this out. You're a Florida State fan, so you know all about this. You have to go all the way back to 1968 to find a Florida State player who has ever had more tackles in a single game than what Hamza Nasruldeen did on Saturday. He had 22 tackles in this game.
That's unheard of for a safety.
Yes, and we know all about Nasruldeen's sideline-to-sideline range and length and man-in-zone coverage. We've seen it all year. But his reliability against the run this year has been what has made the big jump, I think, in his draft stock. And I think we're going to go back to this game in the spring and see that's why he'll be a top 40 pick next April.
Without question. I'm a huge fan of Nasruldeen. We both know that you are a huge fan of Nasruldeen. So I'm really interested to see exactly where his stock takes off from here, just because I think some people were kind of late on him just because he had a lot of questions entering the year, and we liked his film, but we wanted to see him become a much more urgent run defender, and that's something that he has made the adjustment to this year. He's flying downhill, man, and he is filling those gaps exactly like you want to see a strong safety do. Now, what I love is that Florida State has kind of been a bit more, I would say, flexible with him, and they're playing him at more different spots. They're playing him at weak side linebacker. They're playing him at free and strong safety just because they know he's that ultimate chess piece, not only on the back end, but they're using him in the box as well. So he has that well-rounded game that you look for. But I'm going to stay on the defensive side of the ball for my prize stickers. And everyone knows I'm a resident Vikings fan, and this is one of my favorite Vikings ever, Antoine Winfield. But his son, Antoine Winfield Jr., the safety from Minnesota, had a standout game with 11 tackles, two interceptions against Penn State. A big win for Minnesota. It helped them get in the top 10 of the college football playoff rankings, and that's something that we're estimating them to be. That maybe they even cracked the fifth spot. That's something that has been a debate going on right now. But now he has a FBS leading 7 interceptions. So he has that ball hawking ability that you love to see from a safety. And he's playing that free safety role really good. He's also playing some strong safety as well. But he's been a ball magnet this year. And it isn't just right place, right time interceptions with him. He is flying over the top in coverage at that free safety spot and covering sideline to sideline and just following the quarterback's eyes and allowing them to take him to the ball. And he's finishing these plays. So that's something that I'm really loving to see out of Winfield Jr. Do you have some initial thoughts on him?
No defensive player was more instrumental in their team's victory this weekend than Antoine Winfield Jr. And really, you talked about him, FBS leading 7 interceptions. He continued that stretch of dominance. 2 more interceptions against Penn State, who we talked about as the number 4 team in the college football playoff rankings. That's a huge win for Minnesota. And as a redshirt sophomore, I think Winfield could be one of the 2020 NFL Draft's top safety prospects if he decides to declare. He's very smart. And this is a guy who's a playmaker in the air. The biggest question with him is going to be injuries. This guy's been at Minnesota actually for a long time now, even as a redshirt sophomore, but he's been granted 2 medical waivers. So this is a guy that I think he could legit declare for the draft just because how long he's been at the program. And I think this could be his shot now, you know, strike while the iron's hot kind of deal. But the injuries would be a big thing for him if he does declare at the combine. But if you just look at his tape and his traits, this guy has a starting free safety talent. And I think this guy has a big chance to be an early round pick if he declares.
And this is just seems like the year where there's so many former players' sons in it. And it makes me feel old. We have Michael Pittman Jr. Now we have Antoine Winfield Jr. So you're seeing all these former players' sons really having these standout years, and it's really good to see just because these guys have really been around the game all their lives, and I think that definitely could be an asset that some of these teams see with these players just because, not saying they know the ins and outs of what goes on in the NFL, but they have a great example ahead of them that they were raised upon to really lean on when once they do end up declaring for the draft, if Pittman Jr. or Winfield does end up doing. So that'll be something that definitely needs to keep an eye that we need to keep an eye on with these guys, just because I think that definitely could be an asset. And I'm a big fan of Winfield Jr. I like what he has shown this year. But I want to transition to our next topic and something that everybody has been waiting for us to get to, and that was the showdown in Tuscaloosa between Alabama and LSU. The game did not disappoint at all. Over 25 draft prospects on the field. The battle for the QB1 spot with Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, I thought both of those guys showed up and played really well. But Joe Burrow ended up coming out on top, and as well as LSU coming out with a 46-41 victory. So what were your initial thoughts from this game?
Joe Burrow, man. That's my initial thoughts. Joe Burrow. This guy truly is the real deal. And you put it out best in a tweet. There are no more but ifs with him anymore. I mean, this guy has really done it all this season. He's beaten Florida. He's beaten Texas. And now he's beaten Alabama, you know, at Alabama, where no team has done it since, you know, the last 5 years. This is a guy that I think cemented his Heisman campaign, and he might have cemented the number one overall pick with his performance against Alabama. This is a guy that has, you know, showed excellent ball placement throughout the game. And above all, is this guy, man, showed his mobility and his ability to improvise under pressure. How cool, calm, and collected did he look under those pressure situations? I think that was one of the biggest questions of him coming to this game, was because you knew Alabama was going to get pressure. Anthony Jennings and Terrell Lewis, they were getting pressure all night. But Burrow was able to step up in the pocket and deliver strikes. That was the difference. And I think Burrow cemented his status as a top quarterback prospect in this game. And we'll be talking about him a lot next spring.
Oh, without question, man. And I can't think of any more good things to say about Joe Burrow. He was calm, cool, collected. He remained poised in this game. He made every big-time throw that you love to see. He spread the ball around to everybody. And that's something that you wanted to see if he was able to ace this test. And I didn't think he could have played any better than what he did. And going in Tuscaloosa, getting the win on the road, and probably the toughest environment in college football of any stadium, in my opinion. And he just looked completely poised. And that's something that we aren't accustomed to seeing, especially from a guy like Burrow that essentially is, I don't want to say a one-year starter, but he still is relatively new to the LSU spot just because he did transfer from Ohio State last year. But he really didn't blossom into the guy that we're seeing this year until the backstretch of last year. And everybody just wants to keep saying, well, he hasn't played anybody, and he just hasn't done what everybody wants to see from him, or maybe he's just a one-year wonder. And I'm here to say, like, he looked like he hasn't played at an elite level like this last year, but he showed signs of eventually turning into somebody that could have been maybe an early day two prospect. But now he's firmly transitioned himself into being maybe the number one overall selection. And there kind of was a hidden battle in this game between Burrow and Tagovailoa, even though they never were on the field at the same time, of course, just because quarterbacks aren't going against each other. But there's always a hidden battle and a competitive desire between a guy wanting to come out on top. And that's something that I felt from Burrow. He always seemed to be in control, and it just seems like he wanted to win this game just to prove that he was the better quarterback.
Yeah, and one question I have for you is, because I know we haven't really talked about this as much. Do you have a player comparison that reminds you of Joe Burrow? Do you have anything in mind?
I don't have one that I like right now. Yeah. And because I'm kind of cautious with player comparisons, and I don't really put them out there unless it's one that I really like. And like I did with Andrew Thomas and DeBrickashaw Ferguson and then Marcus Stroud and Javon Kinlaw, those were really two that I liked. But just because player comparisons can be taken the wrong way, especially by observers, I would say, just because they don't really know what you mean. And what I mean by that is they expect when you make a player comparison for them to have that type of career that player you're comparing them to, as opposed to the playing styles that you're trying to demonstrate or say that they often exhibit. That's something that I mean with the player comparison. So with Burrow, I don't really have one that I like yet, but I'm sure I will find one here in the coming months or so.
Right. And I think that's a very good answer to that, because I think a lot of people will try to force player comparisons down people's throats when they just don't fit. It's like trying to fit a circle into a box hole. You know what I mean? It's just, you don't want to do that. And I think that's where a lot of scouting can go wrong, because a lot of people will try to compare like Ed Oliver to Aaron Donald, or like, you know, or any other kind of player comparison that, you know, those players can't reach. Also, it sets high expectations for some players. And even when we set something too low, it sets too low of expectations. So comparisons can be a little bit dangerous. So I'm the same way. I don't have a player comparison yet. I'll probably have a better answer for you next spring. But there are just some players who just don't have perfect fit or perfect comparisons to say. So when we get those questions on Twitter, say, you know, who's your comparison for Joe Burrow? Who's your comparison for Prospect X? There's never going to be, you know, not all the time. I could say 90% of the time, there's not going to be this perfect 100% comparison fit. Not even 90%, but 99% of the time, there's just not a perfect fit or comparison for these players. But I think at this time, we just got to appreciate Joe Burrow's greatness right now and what he did, what no other quarterback's been able to do in the last 5 years, and that's beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And to me, Joe Burrow really proved why he is capable and deserving of the number one overall pick in this draft. And I have no other words to say about that.
Without question, I 110% agree with you. But before we finish up this segment, here is another word from our sponsors. And we are back to finish up talking about Alabama and LSU. And there were so many standout players in this game. We've already covered Joe Burrow and exactly what we thought about his performance. And there just really aren't enough good words that we can say about him. But, of course, there were some other standout players in this game. And I'm going to go ahead and name one that really stood out to me. And he's been impressing me this year. And that's Terrell Lewis, the edge rusher from Alabama. I can't say enough good things about him as well, even though he's battled a whole bunch of injuries throughout his Alabama career. And this is definitely certainly like a Christian Miller situation from last year. He ended up being a day two pick for the Panthers. But I think Terrell Lewis definitely could end up being a day two selection. And his previous injury history is probably going to keep him out of the first round. But I think he's firmly playing like a first-round prospect this year. And I keep putting that out there on Twitter just because his explosiveness is off the charts. Now, I do think he needs to gain some weight as far as his body frame. It is a bit frail, but I think that definitely will come over time. But I definitely am intrigued by his traits. Do you have some thoughts on Miller? Or excuse me,
Lewis? Yes. Terrell Lewis was amazing. I mean, this guy, while he didn't have, like, the box score numbers, like, if you pull up the box score in the Alabama-LSU game, I think he only recorded, like, a half sack. But, man, this guy was rushing. I think it was, like, 6 or 7 times. He was just in the quarterback. He was in the quarterback's face. This is a guy who was beating up LSU's tackles left and right, just with inside moves and quickness. And it's really what you want to see from Terrell Lewis. And this is a guy that I think is one of the most advanced pass rushers in this draft in terms of just using different counters and different moves on the edge. I think he's this that unpredictability in toolbox as a rusher will give him a lot of value. And again, we've talked about Lewis a lot before on this podcast, about how the medical, questions would be big for him to answer at the combine. And if he does it, man, he has legit first round traits. And there aren't many edge rushers I'd take over him in this class, just from a pure edge rush perspective. But I want to touch on the other edge rusher in this game, on the opposite side of the field, and that's Kalyvon Chasen. This is a guy that's been viewed more so as like a raw, day two kind of guy, I guess. But we talked about, day one traits, but only in flashes. Like, if you watch the highlights, first round pick, easy. But the rest of the tape, you're like, okay, there's a lot of inconsistencies. In the biggest game of his career, Kalyvon Chasen played the best game of his career. And this is something that I think scouts more so than scouts, NFL coaches will look at this game, and when they set the boards next April, like 3 weeks before the draft, a defensive line coach is going to go up to the general manager and say, "Hey, put this guy in the first round because I can get him to do that consistently," and it's what he did against Alabama, and he didn't have a big box score game either. He didn't record a single sack, but just like Terrell Lewis, this guy was in the backfield all night. Rushing the passer, and he had 4 tackles for loss. This guy was, and one of the biggest knocks on his game is his ability to play the run. And he looked like the best run defensive end in this game. So I'm trying to figure out, Kalyvon Chasen is still a mystery to me, because if you watch this Alabama game, you think he's a top 10 pick. I'm not exaggerating by that. He has the speed, he has all this, he has the size, the length, he showed that he could be a 3-down guy in this game. But the rest of his season, you're thinking, do that all the time. And I think when coaches look at his tape, they're going to be sold, because you know as well as I do that coaches look at more at what they do more than what they don't do. And if they see those flash plays, they're going to put an emphasis on those flash plays. And they're going to convince that front office that, hey, I can get the most out of him. So Chasen, this was the biggest game of his career, especially for his draft stock. And I think this game might have cemented his status as a first-round pick next April.
Without question. He destroyed Alex Leatherwood all game long. And that's something that you want to see from a first-round prospect, especially going against a guy that's listed really in everybody's top 15 as far as big boy rankings and also mock drafts for the most part. I know the Cleveland Browns has been a spot for Alex Leatherwood to be selected, and also the Miami Dolphins pick with the Pittsburgh Steelers selection. That's also been another popular landing spot for him, and the Arizona Cardinals has been another popular landing spot for Leatherwood. So he's seen as a consensus first-round selection, even though this is his first year playing offensive tackle. Chasen made him look exactly like that. And I thought he struggled, just because he really struggled with Chasen's speed. You saw his explosiveness bending around the edge. He was winning the corner against him all night. And he even showed some power on running downs, like you alluded to a bit earlier. And his tackle for loss numbers were, I thought that was outstanding for him, just because run defense has always been a concern for him, and it's just not an area that's been his strong suit throughout his career at LSU, but he looks fully recovered from that torn ACL, and it's really good to see that, just because if you go back and watch his first game of the season last year where he did tear the ACL against Miami, he showed that explosiveness, but it's really good to see that that still stayed intact with him, just because that's something that you worry about if he's able to return back to form and still have that same type of upfield burst, and it looks even better. And that showed in this game.
Yeah, so question about Alex Leatherwood, because the whole world saw him struggle against Chaisson. And, you know, he's a former guard, and I think, you know, he's played well at tackle this season, but he really hasn't faced many tests. Chaisson was really his first test, and I'd give him probably a D on his performance tonight, on his performance on Saturday. And so my question to you, Jordan, is, do you play him at guard the next level, or you stick with him at tackle? Because I think his skill set's always been best for guard, with his power and his ability to maul in the run game. Really, he's really best in tight quarters. And I think you saw him in open space kind of struggle against a speed rusher like Chaisson. I want to get your thoughts on that, is if his game is better suited inside the next level.
I think so. And this is a really good question, just because I think it's kind of a trial and error period with him at tackle, just because he hasn't done it before. And it's really hard for somebody to really learn that on the fly. And he's really relying on his athleticism a lot with his pass sets. And even though he's still really raw with it, he's still really figuring things out as he goes along. And then you match him up against probably one of the most talented edge rushers in the country in Chaisson, and I think he got exposed for the most part, just because he's not able to just get by with that, athleticism. And I really thought he got exposed. And this is something that he really needed, I think, just because evaluators wanted to see if he could really hold up at tackle or if he's better suited at guard. Now, in my personal opinion, I think he would be fine at left tackle, but I think his upside is greater along the interior, and he can get you through emergency situations, or if, you know, you want to stick him out there if there's some injuries or something. But I just wouldn't trust him over the long haul at left tackle. And in my personal opinion, I would stick him at guard, or I even would try him at center just to see how he would hold up there. And I just think his upside is greater along the interior, just because his game is more predicated upon power as opposed to athleticism. And I think that's something that got exposed in this game, just because when he's not able to get hands on and he has to recover by using his athleticism at tackle, he's just not able to do that.
Let's talk about these running backs, man. I mean, these running backs in this game were absolutely insane. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, yeah. We've talked about him a lot in this podcast, 200 total yards. I mean, this guy did both dual purpose, running and receiving game. He iced the game. He's got the spin move on Xavier McKinney at the goal line.
Yep.
He had that catch on, you know, 3rd and 10 or wherever it was, you know, where LSU needed the first down. He caught it low ball by Joe Burrow and fought his way to the first down. And then he iced the game with that run where he just basically ran through 12 Alabama defenders. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I don't know about you, but he gives me just a lot of, like, that Doug Martin, Maurice Jones-Drew vibe, you know, that low, built-to-the-ground guy
who has
good vision, decisiveness, dual-purpose player, three-down guy. Another great thing about him, excellent pass protector. This guy was picking up blitzes all night long, and I think that will go a long way for coaching staffs when they evaluate his game. And I think it would be a big reason why he might be one of the top 5 or 6 running backs drafted if he declares, because his game is just so well-rounded. He doesn't have, like, that one trait that you see, okay, that's what stands out. Like, Etienne's his speed. With Swift, it's more like his change of direction. With Taylor, it's his power and his ability to get better as the game goes along. But with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, it's just a mix of everything. Pass protection, pass catching, decisiveness, change of direction, power. He really has – he's really good in every trait. And I'm a big fan of him. I watched his tape over the weekend, and I couldn't wait to see what he did against Alabama. And he's really solidified himself as a top 5 or 6 running back on my board with this performance. And then Najee Harris, we can't forget about him. If it wasn't for, you know, Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire balling out, we'd be talking about Najee Harris as a guy that, you know, that just carried Alabama to victory in this game.
Right.
Because this guy, how many yards did he end up having? Do you know, did he almost have 200 in this game?
I think it was close. I don't know the exact number, but
Right.
that touchdown reception he made was
Oh,
incredible.
absolutely. I think that's one of the big questions we had with him
Yeah.
was he more just a two-down guy? And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he goes over Patrick Queen on this back shoulder fade like he's Larry Fitzgerald. I mean,
Right.
Najee Harris, this was such a huge game for his draft stock to do what he did, not only in pass protection as a pass catcher, but just running the football down LSU's throat like that. There was a point in time where he just, like, you remember like where Josh Jacobs just ran all over people in the college football playoff? That's almost why I got the vibe what Najee Harris is doing against LSU.
Yeah.
And it's just not – this was such a big game for both of these running backs. And I could not go without doing an LSU-Alabama recap for draft prospects without talking about how big Harris and Clyde Edwards-Helaire played in this game.
And I'm really glad that you mentioned the name Doug Martin with Edwards-Helaire, just because I think that is a spot-on comparison for him, just because with Doug Martin, it was the same exact thing. We didn't know what thing he really mastered in, and I just think he's a master of none. And that's what you see with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I think he's going to be a great 1B rusher for the guy that backs up that predominant 1A type of guy. And there's not going to be a steep drop-off or anything with him, just because he's so well-rounded, like you mentioned. He can catch out of the backfield. He can run routes in the slot. They've even experimented with him there some. And also, we know how good his running ability is and just how low he stays to the ground with his pad level and how great his contact balance is. That seems to be the thing, or the big term that scouts like to use with these running backs, just how good they can avoid contact and fend off those hits once they are hit initially, and if they can create coming out of the backfield if the pitcher isn't clean. And that's something that we saw with Edwards-Helaire. So I'm really excited about him. Najee Harris, like you mentioned, he's really starting to live up to that five-star sticker, like I like to say, and he's starting to really flourish in that main feature back role in that Alabama backfield. So I'm definitely excited about those two guys. But, of course, I have to transition to the secondary. Let's talk about both secondaries. I thought Grant Delpit struggled in this game, and tackling was the big issue coming into the game with him. And I thought that really was the biggest wart for him exiting this game as well. And it seems to be a really serious issue, and there are some rumors out there that he is playing hurt this year. But we don't really know exactly what's going on with him. We can only grade exactly what he puts on film. And I thought he struggled mightily in this game from a tackling perspective. And then on the other side of the ball, I thought Trayvon Diggs was really up and down for the most part in this game. And I thought he showed some inconsistencies as far as finding the ball in the air and really attacking the ball out of the air. I know he gave up a touchdown really early to Ja'Marr Chase early on, where he just struggled and didn't get his head around him. But his ball skills, that really isn't a question with him. We know how well he is in that department. But I thought he was really up and down in this game. And with you being the resident DB expert, who were some guys that really stood out to you and some that were some disappointments in a sense?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts here. Xavier McKinney, I think, completely outclassed Grant Delpit in this game. These were considered the top two safeties in the 2020 NFL draft class in terms of draft-eligible guys. And McKinney ended up with two sacks and three tackles for a loss, was in the backfield all night, uses a blitzer, a chess piece. He looked like a real difference maker. I think there were two Alabama defenders that really stood out from snap to finish. And that was Terrell Lewis as an edge rusher, then Xavier McKinney in the box. I think those two guys were consistently the two Alabama defenders that showed up on Saturday. And Xavier McKinney, I think, really established himself as a top prospect of this game. I know he had that miss on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the goal line with the spin, but no one was tackling a Clyde Edwards-Helaire on that play. That was just an incredible play by the running back, more so than a miss by McKinney. McKinney played excellent. And this guy, man coverage, he's awesome. And then you see him coming down in run support, being a blitzer. He's the best blitzing player, I think, in college football, regardless of position. This guy just has a natural feel, that instinct, and just that it factor I think you look for in a defensive player. McKinney has that, and I think he'll make any team happy at the next level. Great game for him. Conversely, Grant Delpit, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, just didn't show up. I mean, he had multiple opportunities to tackle guys in the open field, specifically Najee Harris, Jerry Jeudy. He has ankles broken a couple times, and you're figuratively, not literally, because he is playing a little injured, I think, on a hurt ankle. But Delpit, that has been the biggest problem with his game, is tackling. And you saw it last year. You saw it a little bit this year. And he's not the greatest athlete. So you want to know, like, how is he going to separate? Because you know the safety position is not – highly valued in the NFL. How's he going to separate himself from other prospects when he's judged individually and we take LSU off of his name? That's what I want to know, because I think the big thing about like Grant Delpit's draft stock is just that LSU pedigree and what he's done in recent years. But when you just look at the traits and kind of judge him individually against guys like Xavier McKinney or just other positions in his draft that are more valuable, you're starting to think, I take this guy over him. But I take this guy over him too. It's just like, where is Grant Delpit going to be ranked in this draft is my question. And I think this game is only going to raise more concerns. It was definitely a questionable performance for him from on Saturday night. Other guys, you talk about Trayvon Diggs, I don't think it was much more of a back-to-ball tracking thing with him. I think it was more just him getting off balance in this game a lot. And I think that happens a lot with these taller guys. Trayvon Diggs, 6'2", of course. But on that play, on that first Jamar Chase touchdown, he just fell down. He looked for the ball and over the right shoulder and everything. He just fell down. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you got to stay on your feet. And we saw that again on Jamar Chase slant route, too. He fell down, got the pass interference. And then I think one of the big things about Trayvon Diggs, too, is that I think he's super physical. But against the run, he's super physical at the line of scrimmage in terms of jamming and press coverage. But against the run, he's just sometimes just doesn't look interested. And you saw that on the last touchdown of the game and just trying to strip the ball. Didn't work. Trayvon Diggs had an up and down game. He had a tough assignment shadowing, I think, the best receiver in next year's draft class in Jamar Chase. But it just, he had a rough one shadowing him, and it didn't go well most times. But he also had some good plays. I mean, there are some good reps in press coverage where he really jammed Chase at the last scrimmage and was able to string up a couple of plays where he really locked him up and Joe Burrow had to look somewhere else. So it wasn't all bad for Trayvon Diggs, but I think you saw what concerns you. The tall, I think, upright player who can kind of get off balance sometimes because it's kind of like a change of direction. And then kind of this disinterest in the run game, I think, really hurt him. So Trayvon Diggs, Grant Delpit, kind of the games you kind of want to throw away if you're their agents next spring. But Xavier McKinney, two thumbs up for him.
Definitely. McKinney helped himself a lot. And he seems to be the forgotten man in the secondary for whatever reason, just because we hear about Trayvon Diggs all the time. And, of course, Patrick Surtain Jr., we hear about him all the time. But McKinney seems to be the one forgotten about guy that doesn't get a lot of love for whatever reason, just because he isn't a notable name like the other guys, just because you have a former very successful player's son. And then, of course, Stephon Diggs' little brother and Trayvon Diggs. So both of those guys are going to be more notable names. But McKinney gets lost in the shuffle a bit with some of these guys, but I thought he helped himself a lot. Of any prospect in this game, I thought he probably, outside of Joe Burrow, I thought he probably helped himself the most in this game. And he was just flashing everywhere. He was sticking his face on people. He was covering. And that's something that you want to see out of a versatile safety like he is. And like I said, man, anytime you wear number 15 at safety for Alabama, you have to be good. Ronnie Harrison was a perfect example of that. And I think McKinney probably is a better prospect than what Harrison was coming out. And I think he's going to be much more athletic than what Harrison was as well. So it definitely will be a name to keep an eye on as we get closer to April. Did you have anything else to add before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I just want to touch on how good Devontae Smith was.
Yes.
Because we talk so much on this podcast about how good Jerry Jeudy is, how good Henry Ruggs is, and rightfully so. These guys are going to be top 15, top 20 picks in the draft. But I think this game was just a statement from Devontae Smith saying, hey, don't forget about me. I'm a first-round talent too, and I think Alabama could legit have three of the first five wide receivers drafted in the 2020 NFL draft. And Devontae Smith legit has first-round traits. Look at his ability to win at the line of scrimmage, his release package. This guy runs excellent routes for how, you know, for his frame and what he is. This guy, we talk about how Judy's such a good route runner. Let's talk about how good Devontae Smith is at the line of scrimmage, getting off and keeping himself free. He went up against Derek Stingley all game and made him look silly most of the time. We talk about Derek Stingley. Last podcast is one of the best corners in the country. And Devontae Smith, the third Alabama wide receiver to many, made him look silly. And I think Devontae Smith is just a statement on his part saying, hey, I'm here too, and I'm here to stay. Big game for him. And it's not just him over the middle, you know, as a route runner. As a deep threat, this guy is awesome in terms of just, you know, getting over the top on the cornerback, tracking the ball, and, you know, finishing at the catch point. This guy is the best Alabama wide receiver making adjustments in the air. And I think both Judy and Rose both agree with that as well. Devonta Smith, I think, really made a statement here. And I think he could be one of the first five wide receivers drafted next spring if he declares.
So last thought on this before we do officially wrap it up. And I'm going to throw this name out there, and I just want to get your thoughts on it really quickly. So the name that I wrote down while watching this game, actually, when watching Devonta Smith, Tyler Boyd. Does he remind you of Tyler Boyd coming out of Pitt?
It's different because if you were, I don't know if you were following me whenever Tyler Boyd was coming out, but I think Tyler Boyd was my second best wide receiver in that draft class. I think I had 14th or 15th overall on my draft board, higher than anyone in the draft community for sure. And, you know, Boyd was more so just like great route runner, great hands, great adjustment maker, just like Devonta Smith. But the one aspect I think Devonta Smith has that Boyd really didn't have at either that Pitt or even at Cincinnati right now is just that speed element, just the ability to take the top off the defense.
Absolutely.
Devonta Smith has legit speed. And I think Boyd was always that 4-5-5 guy, whereas Devonta Smith can legit take it to the house anytime he gets the ball. So I think he has a little more layers, but I think Boyd was I think Boyd was just so refined as a route runner coming out. I just love his projection to the next level. But I think Devonta Smith just has a higher ceiling because of his big playability on the outside.
It's definitely fun to think about these comparisons. And, of course, we're going to bounce ideas back and forth off of each other, just like we did there. And sometimes we're going to disagree. Sometimes we are going to agree. That's the great thing about the draft process and what we do. But that is our show for the week. We are the Locked On. Locked On College Football Podcast. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. I am Jordan Reed. He is Jonah Tools. Make sure to subscribe and tell a friend to tell a friend about the podcast. Leave a 5-star review. We will be back tomorrow, of course, to discuss the other games that happened during the week and some guys that stood out to us, some stock up, stock down, and some other ideas as well. But as always, thank you guys for listening. We will see you tomorrow.